Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Travis McDade. Travis, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Vic?
Very good. We were chatting a moment ago, and you told me that you work for the state. Tell our listeners which state that is and what you do.
The good old state of Illinois. I work at the College of Law at the University of Illinois. So I guess only nominally for the state. It's not like I consider myself a state worker, though I do work at an academic institution. With the state of Illinois finances anymore, I'm not even certain how much state money the University of Illinois gets. But in any event, I'm a curator of rare books at the law school here, and it's a wonderful job, a wonderful institution, and I feel lucky to be here.
So if I come to your facility and I want to steal one of your rare books, how do I go about that? How do I get in there and steal your good stuff?
Well, the best way to do it traditionally has been to be an insider. So you maybe go to library school, get a master's degree, become a librarian, and do some sort of special collections work. Finally, get access to the rare stacks, and then after several years of work, you'll be able to sneak books out the back door.
Perfect.
How you would do it, I guess, if you didn't want to go through the whole rigmarole of studying and specializing and all that, is
you're not going to tell me, are you?
I'm just trying to think of the best way to do it.
Okay.
It depends on the location. We have a couple of different areas where our rare books are housed, and you'd have to there'd be different techniques for both of them. And to be honest with you, it would only be worth it for about 10, maybe 20 of the books that we have. I mean, we have really a great collection at the law school. But if you're going to go through the process of stealing them and risking going to prison, there's probably only maybe a couple dozen that are worth that effort, and you'd have to know where those are located exactly, and then that would be sort of the beginning. It would take a lot of research and effort.
These would be the books that were from the law practice of Lincoln and Herndon, no doubt.
Yeah, that's right.
The reason that's why. Right. I asked that question, obviously, is because you've just written a book called Thieves of Book Row, New York's Most Notorious Rare Book Ring and the Man Who Stopped It. I don't want to steal any books. I may be a bibliomaniac, but I'm not that bad.
Right.
What led you to this story and caused you to write about it?
Appropriately, it was a bookstore. I was thinking about writing a book on sort of the entirety of book theft in American history, library theft in particular, and starting in the 19th century with the large scale foundation of libraries, and so I started doing research to this effect. 5 or 6 years ago, we started getting access to newspaper databases in a way that we hadn't had as recently as say 10 years ago. Where you could do full text PDF searches of newspapers going back to the 19th century, and here at the U of I we had I think the Chicago Tribune, the San Francisco Chronicle, the New York Times, the Post, the Wall Street Journal, that sort of thing, and I would just do searches in these newspaper archives and find these stories from the 19th century and the early 20th century about these library thefts and other book thefts, and one of the stories I discovered in this process of trying to write the larger history, it was this theft that took place in the early 1930s. And it was interesting enough to me that these guys had stolen these books from the New York Public Library, which is one of the great world collections of rare books. And so I just wrote a little bit about it based on these newspaper articles, and I think I maybe found a Publisher's Weekly article, and this was just going to be something folded into this larger book. And about 6 months later, I was in downtown Champaign where I live, and just left the coffee shop and was looking across the street, and there was an old secondhand bookstore that was sort of a classic secondhand bookstore, sort of crowded with books, and it sort of felt dusty, and it was just what we like about rummaging through old bookstores. And unfortunately, it was going out of business, and it had a sign on there that said going out of business or something. And so I walked over there, and was just browsing in the books about books section, which in this case was way up high. It was on like the 11th or 12th shelf of this range, and so I was on a little step ladder, and it was very precarious. I felt like I was going to fall over, and I was sort of browsing the titles up there, and one of them was by a man named Caius Metcalf, who was a longtime Harvard librarian and who I'd known just from other research I'd done, and so I pulled off his book, and it turns out he worked at the New York Public Library in the 1920s and early 1930s, and it dawned on me that maybe he was there at the time of this theft that I only knew a little bit about. And sure enough, he was there, and he knew William Bergquist, who was the special investigator who worked at the New York Public Library. And he had five or six pages about either Bergquist or this particular crime. And so all of a sudden, I had doubled my sources. I was onto something, and I thought, oh man, this will either be very helpful to this book that I'd plan on writing, this long book, or it's going to be a little article. And that was sort of the start of it. From that point on, I thought, well, maybe I'll do this as a standalone piece, and started doing research just on that, and found four or five more sources within the next couple of days, and all of a sudden I had enough for a feature article. So that's how it started.
Travis McDade joins us. His book is Thieves of Book Row, New York's Most Notorious Rare Book Ring and the Man Who Stopped It. On the cover of this book, we have an image of the book that is really central in this, but there are so many books mentioned in this. It's a book lover's dream, and I enjoyed it so much. And particularly, I enjoyed reading about something that they called Book Row, which without Book Row, this thievery probably wouldn't have been happening like it was, right?
That's right. That's right. It was, you know, the story of books in New York City could be, and in many ways is, its own book. There's a book about Book Row, but that was as captivating to me as any of the theft stuff. I sort of, you know, I research and write in the area of theft all the time, and so it's interesting to me, but the many of the most interesting parts to me were just sort of immersing myself in old New York and finding out what the book culture was like, and how Book Row came to be, and what it meant to people, what it still means to people to some extent, and the separation between the Book Row area and this other area in Midtown Manhattan that had a lot of the sort of ritzy rare book traffic. But none of this could exist without Book Row, because it was this concentration of largely book men. I mean, there were some women, but it was mostly men who had started these stores themselves, or had inherited them from their folks or from people that they had worked for. Most of these guys got their start just, you know, sort of learning at the elbow of another bookman in the early 1900s or the late 19th century, and it was this area that was just filled with all these guys who knew each other. Some of them liked each other, some of them didn't. If you wanted to go to a place where you could be fairly certain that you could find a particular book that you wanted, you would go to Book Row. It was famous for that, which you know, we sort of take for granted now that if we want a book, we can find it, right? I mean, if you can't find it in your local bookstore, you can go to another bookstore, or you can find it online, or that sort of thing. But, you know, in the 1920s and 30s, none of that was available. I mean, there were bookstores, but you couldn't expect them to have everything. And if you wanted to find a specific book, one of the places you could go and find it was on Book Row, because if one store didn't have it, you could be relatively certain that one of the other stores did.
And there was outright collusion. A lot of these booksellers were crooked. And some of them would even give lists of books that they wanted stolen. And a lot of these thieves, they were just in it for the money. They weren't in it because they loved rare books. They just wanted to sell the stuff. And it's incredible to read how this happened and how many of these booksellers were crooked.
Yeah. A couple of things there. There's this idea that we have about people who steal books, also people who steal artwork, that there's this, you know, there's sort of romance to it, the sort of Thomas Crown thing, and where people are in love with these books and have to possess them, and that's sort of nonsense. There are guys like that exist for sure, But most of the people who steal books, not only now, but traditionally, have been people who wanted to sell them. And you pegged it. These guys in the 1920s, and especially in the early 1930s, when a lot of people were out of work, would do this labor, which is essentially what it was. A lot of travel, going to libraries in the Northeast and as far west as Ohio, and just picking books off shelves and bringing them back or mailing them back to Manhattan. And they did it not because they loved books or even knew anything about books. They would be given a list of books, taught how to recognize certain things about an individual book, to find out if it was a valuable one or not, and then steal them and then send them back to Manhattan. The thing about the booksellers is, you know, there are a few of these guys who are just flagrantly guilty. There's just no question that they were in on it. They were the prime movers of this book theft ring. But then there are these other guys in sort of gray area where they're just regular booksellers who are buying books on the cheap from these guys who are clearly doing something illegal. And you can sort of fill out a culpability flow chart for all the people who are on Book Row, and most of the people wouldn't be strictly guilty, but would be guilty enough if they were being honest about it, of knowing that there were some shenanigans going on, and that these books weren't on the up and up. They were getting sold to them far cheaper than books of that quality should have been getting sold to them. So. It's complicated trying to point the finger at certain guys, though I'm happy to say that I don't shy from pointing the finger a few times in the book.
Oh. The book is Thieves of Book Row. Travis McDade wrote it. We have one thief in particular that you talk about quite a bit in this book, and he's a very odd man, a very strange guy.
Yeah.
Tell us about him.
Are you talking about Borden Clark?
Yeah, your guy, Harold Borden Clark. You're a weirdo. He's a weird dude.
Yeah. I tried to figure him out a lot. And, you know, one of the things about writing a book is you spend so much time with these guys, and you never quite know what you know about him. Of course, most of these guys are long dead. And what I had from him as far as sources, I had all the stuff that described him in a negative way, which was newspaper articles, all the court records, that sort of thing. So, you know, that's what I'm used to seeing about guys, is the stuff that puts them in a negative light. And I always try to at least see another side of them, right? And so with him, I was able to get his own archives. His archives I don't think I'm spoiling it to say that he later became a reputable guy and had his own business, and he was very self-centered throughout his life. And one of the things that he did was he donated his archives to the I can't remember what the name of the library is, but it's the main archives in Ottawa. And he was a Canadian, and so I had hundreds and hundreds of pages of his records from after all of the book theft, after he'd gotten in trouble, and after the most of the action of my book takes place. I have the records of what his life was like after that, and you know, I thought they might sort of fill his character out, and that I might come to like him a little bit, or at least appreciate where he was coming from, or you know, maybe he'd made some mistakes. But that didn't happen. He was a jerk his whole life. He was just a bad guy. And everything I read, even up through the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, I think he dies. I think he dies in the 70s. About him, that things that were written by him even was just this bitter guy who was slightly paranoid, slightly to moderately paranoid, was thought a great deal of himself, didn't think a great deal of many other people, didn't treat women very well. I allude to this a little bit early on, though as you might imagine, there wasn't a lot of records from the 1920s and 30s about this, but there were a few mentions of the way he treated women, and the impression I got was that's the way he treated women as he got older too, and there was just there was just nothing about him that recommended him as a nice guy. Everything I found out about him was that he was a bad guy, and so I didn't even feel bad about describing him as I described him in the 20s and 30s as sort of this confidence man who resented people who had regular jobs and who was sort of making the scene with a bunch of cash that he got from stealing from libraries and the amount of lies this guy told was just incredible. There's parts in the book where he lies to people about things that he knows that they're going to check up on, right? I mean, he says he knows these people, and he knows that the folks that he's lying to are going to call these people and find out if he actually knows them, and he doesn't know these people. And I couldn't get my head around why at a time when a person's word and a person's name and reputation was important, especially in certain areas, why he would be so frivolous about it, why he would not cover his tracks better. And I don't know. He just thought he was getting away with so many other things that he could get away with everything. So
the book is Thieves of Book Row. Travis McDay joins us. New York's most notorious rare book ring and the man who stopped it. We have our heroes. We have our villains. It reads a lot like a crime novel. There aren't homicides particularly. About the only fatalities occur when a thief is caught and sentenced to Sing Sing and decides he'd rather die than go there.
That's right. Yeah.
I think my favorite scene in this entire book is where, without giving away too much, we have a rehabilitated thief who is now working for a library to try to stop other thieves. I mean, who's better to catch a thief than a former thief? And the moment when, I think it's in New Jersey somewhere, he's in the library and he looks over and he recognizes one of his old fellow thieves working the stacks. I love that moment of recognition. He's like, I know what that guy's doing. And sure enough, he watches him until the guy slips a couple of books in his pants. These guys were brazen. And these libraries, particularly in places like Massachusetts, they were ripe for the picking, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Librarians just didn't know what hit them. I started in this area of library theft and book theft in a very contemporary way. I was writing about a crime that took place in the early 90s. And so I started writing about either crimes that were going on now or recently or for the past 20 or 30 years. And it wasn't until I started researching what became this book, but what was once this going to be this different book 4 or 5 years ago, that I discovered that the story is basically the same. I mean, for all these recent crimes, it seems like the librarians don't know what's happening. They get stolen from, and then they say, or the archivists as well, they say, well, this is never going to happen to us again. Now we know. Well, librarians have been saying that for 150 years since the beginning, since the major foundation of libraries in the United States. They just didn't anticipate, especially in Massachusetts where they had these really fantastic libraries, they just didn't anticipate that many of the books that were on their shelves were worth stealing, and they certainly didn't think that people would travel all the way from Manhattan to do it. So they just didn't know. Now, some of them were savvy enough to put some of their very valuable materials away, but there were always enough things on the shelves that made it worth a trip by one of these book scouts, these crooked book scouts, and sometimes 4 or 5 trips. People just didn't have any idea that the things that were on their shelves were worth so much. I'd like to say that starting in the 1930s and 1940s, libraries started to recognize how valuable some of their materials were and put them away in lock stacks or in special collections. But of course, that didn't happen. I mean, it didn't happen for decades and decades in many places.
And one of the categories that was very popular for theft because these were extremely rare books was a category that you call Americana. And there was a bookseller in this region, in Southwest Ohio and Cincinnati, who was one of the leading Americana sellers, and he was crooked.
Yeah, he was crooked. Well, the gentleman, his name was William Smith, the gentleman who you mentioned earlier who got caught, and you're right, it was in New Jersey, it was in the Newark Public Library, who got caught by Mahoney, who was the former thief who had become who had been turned by Bergquist to become a good guy and become a special investigator. He was from Ohio too. He was from Lima, and he sort of was based out of Ohio and moved east on these well-worn circuits of small towns. He'd travel south of Lake Erie, across northern Ohio to Pennsylvania, and then through New York and on up to the East Coast, and then sort of come back around in a more southern route. But one of the guys who he worked with most often was William Smith there in Cincinnati. And Smith is, if you look him up now, I mean, he's universally lauded. He was this great old bookman who was famous in southern Ohio for owning one of the great stores in the area. And Cincinnati was a great old book town because it was a river town, and back when we had the Western Reserve, and books first started being published in what would later become Ohio. A lot of them were either published in and around Cincinnati or brought to Cincinnati, and he sort of cornered the market there. He would travel around in Indiana and northern Kentucky and Ohio and get books that were published in what later became these states, or were about what later became these states, and also manuscripts, sort of handwritten things by families, diaries, that sort of thing, all of which is under the umbrella of Americana, and he would sell it there in Cincinnati and had a booming business, and then went out of business eventually. And then went back into business in the late 19-teens and early 1920s and decided that he wasn't ever going to go out of business again. And so he had sort of the legitimate arm of his shop where he again mined the collections of people's attics all over the what was by then the American Midwest. But he also had these emissaries who would go east and steal from collections, and not necessarily go east, would also steal right there in Ohio and Kentucky and Indiana, and one of these guys was this guy named who's known as Hildebrand, who Stanley Wamis was his name, and he had been a bookman and was a good book scout, and just decided that it was easier to steal these things than it was to buy them for a cheap price, and he became one of the main suppliers for Smith.
He was the mystery thief, and I got so excited when they were in Southwest Ohio and you had this guy hitting these libraries, because I thought maybe he's going to go visit the Antioch College Library, because we are the Antioch College radio station. I thought maybe he's going to go over there and try to steal something. I got really excited, but he didn't make it to that. Well, if he did, you didn't mention it.
Do you think he hit the Antioch College Library? He did. Oh yeah, I don't have any proof of that. And
you're guessing he probably came through, huh?
I think he did. You know, Ohio has a number of these small colleges like Kenyon College, Oberlin, Antioch, Ohio Wesleyan, and all these colleges that had these libraries that were particularly vulnerable because they had these nice collections founded largely in the 19th century and were underprotected. So I don't have any direct proof of this. He was never tried for stealing from any of these places. Of course, he stole from 1,000 places he was never found to have stolen from and never tried for stealing from. But I'm certain that he stopped in just about every town that had a library in Ohio, and so yes, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he made it to Yellow Springs.
I'm picturing him stepping off the train. Our guest has been Travis McDade. His book is Thieves of Book Row, New York's Most Notorious Rare Book Ring and the Man Who Stopped It. And this got me looking at my own collection of books. I suffer from a mild case of bibliomania. I have too many books. I admit it. I was looking at some books last night thinking about this interview, and I had obtained them from an estate of an elderly person who passed away a few years ago. And I have three books that were part of the collection of the Chillicothe, Ohio Library. They're stamped. They've still got the sleeves in the pockets there.
Oh, wow.
And I don't see any record that they've been withdrawn. There's other stamps. They're all first editions from about 1900. Ohio Anna by some guy named Naylor. One book's about Chief Tecumseh. Another's about Mad Anthony Wayne. And they've been rebound in Cincinnati. They're stamped 1960, rebound in Cincinnati. But I don't see any indication that these books were ever withdrawn or deaccessioned. What do you think? You think they're hot? They have prices written in them.
No, so, you know, there are millions of books out there that have been legitimately deaccessioned from libraries, and the librarians often don't stamp them withdrawn and wouldn't otherwise indicate it. I think the best indication that they probably aren't stolen is the fact that they have the sleeve in the back and that they still have an indication on them that they were library books or they're ex libris, because, you know, the people who are in the business of collecting, and particularly the people who are in the business of selling these things, would have gotten rid of those markings.
I see.
Yeah, they wouldn't want someone sniffing around trying to find out if these things were stolen. And let me tell you, I bought a book on eBay or Amazon or something. It was a nice book. It was something I needed for the collection, and it came with one of tattletape on it. And when I walked it in, I got it at home, and when I walked it into the library here, it set off the alarms.
Really?
Oh, it was so
embarrassing.
Yes, that's right. And so I found out where it was from, and it was a small school in Pennsylvania, and I phoned them, and I said, listen, I got this book. I bought it. Here's how much it costs. Here's what it is. I gave them the whole bit. And the head of circulation called me back an hour later and said that it had been deaccessioned, and they just didn't get rid of the any of the markings and that sort of thing. And so, I think you're safe. I think what you have is fine.
Well, that's a great story. And there's many of them in this new book by Travis McDade. If you're a book lover, a bibliophile, or even a bibliomaniac like me, I think you might enjoy it. It's Thieves of Book Row, New York's Most Notorious Rare Book Ring, and The Man Who Stopped It, just published by Oxford University Press. And it's really been a pleasure having you on the program.
It was great to talk to you, Vic. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Sometimes I'll run into a listener who will say, gosh, Vic, I missed your interview with William Randolph Hearst the other day, and I'd really like to hear it. And I always say, well, you know, you really did miss out, because if you go to the WYSO website, you can hear an archive of podcasts of interviews that we've done on this program over the last couple of years. There's over 100 of them. Go to WYSO.org and click on Book Nook, and you can listen to them whenever you like. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.